welcome to an episode of Customer Experience Superheroes Podcast. My name is Christopher Brooks, and I am your host throughout this series. A series in which we bring you inspirational figures from in the world of customer experience. They share their ideas and their insights, and we hope you as the listener can take some value from what they share and apply them to your own world. Today is a bit of a double whammy because it's a superhero podcast meets the Customer Experience Book Club. So at Lexden, the company I work for, we've been running the CX Book Club for about 18 months or so now. And it was a way of encouraging those who find it challenging to get their head into business books to come together with other like-minded CX people and spend some time indulging in some of the customer experience titles that are available. We would get together, have a Q&A session with the authors, and also then run a workshop so we could demonstrate how we could turn the principles in their books into practical usage within the workplace. This year, we've completed the final of our current series in the book club, and that is the book titled Why Your Customer Experience Program Will Fail. Now, if you've come across this title, you'll know it's by the incredible Frederic Nierhoff and Alexandra Pilniak, who as a kind of powerful double act have put together what is a brutally honest and, in their own words, authentic book on how to deliver customer experience successfully by understanding and recognizing all of the traps and the opportunities to fail along the way. So we caught up with the dynamic duo recently when we hosted our CX Book Club episode and combined it with this Superheroes podcast. So I hope you enjoy the mashup as they tell you all about why they got into writing the book, the creative process, which is one of the most interesting we've come across in the book club. And also they share their answers to some of the questions that the people in the book club pose. So hope you enjoy it. Over to the dynamic duo. So we are here today for another one of our book clubs, and we have Alexandra and Frederic with us, who have penned some time ago, not a long time ago, but some time ago, Why Your Customer Experience Program Will Fail. So welcome to you both. How are you?
Thank you, Christopher. Great to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you for coming along. I've actually got my copy here, and you won't remember this, but I've got the card that says, Dear Christopher, enjoy reading our book and let us know what you think of it. We would be happy to become part of your book club. So if I was some sort of weird wish giver, this is it.
we do remember writing this
card very well.
You
do. It's handwritten.
Yes, lovely. It is.
It's legible as well, which is very different to my own. But
It must have been me then who wrote the
so it's finally happened. We're having it here. I'm sure this won't be or hasn't been kind of the pinnacle of your engagement throughout this, because what we find talking to authors is you get invited to some strange and wonderful things when you've written a book. So it'll be interesting to both nodding there. So it'll be interesting to find out how that goes. Okay, so and we have some of our book club members here with us. We've got Michael, Natasha, Lauren, and Kat. So we're going to get to know Alexandra and Frederic a bit to understand the motivation for the book. You actually give us quite a good appreciation, more than any other author I think I've come across, in terms of your process of working together. And you're both smiling. You seem to get along. It seemed to, like, you know, work. Quite often we had our previous author was Professor Dr. Phil Klaus. And we said, how was it? And he said, I hated it. Absolutely hated it. Never again. Really didn't enjoy the process at all. So it'd be interesting to see how it was for you.
Well, we had those moments too, Chris.
Oh, you had those moments. Okay, at least you're honest. You're honest. You have to be honest the way you go on about authenticity in your book. You know, you have to be, don't you?
Yeah.
And obviously we'll go into some of the topics in the book. It's a very refreshing write, I have to say. I don't know whether you had a lot of battles with your editor to keep stuff in. I don't know. We'll find that out. But there's lots of, you know, what you shouldn't do, which quite often editors don't want you to include. But we'll find out from you as we go on. But quick introductions then. So I had a look at LinkedIn profiles. You both also have the rarity of authors' kind of credibility of working within companies as well. Quite often there's people who stand on stage and tell us what it's like to work in a company, but you guys actually are working within organisations and appreciate, I think some of the way you've written it, you can tell that perspective is coming rather than from the outside kind of viewing in. So Alexandra, you're first on my screen. Could you give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself and your way in the world of customer experience?
Yeah, of course. I was born and raised in Poland, and then I did my studies in Italy, in Milan. This is where I fell in love with the language, the culture, the Italian mentality. For the past 11 years already, oh my gosh, the time flies, I'm living in the Netherlands. So I had quite some international experience. I work as a customer-centric culture manager currently at Kramp. It's an agricultural wholesale in the Netherlands. They are present in the whole Europe, serving more than 60,000 customers and having more than 1 billion turnover. I, of course, worked in customer experience previously as well. So for me, that's already 10 years working in that field, jointly with project management and marketing as well as sales. So quite a vast portfolio. I'm passionate about people and about culture. That's why I'm also a certified Hofstede organizational culture practitioner, to help organizations to assess their level of the culture that they have in the organization and if it supports their strategy or eats it for breakfast and lunch and dinner. I was also judging at the SIX Awards because I love celebrating people who go the extra mile, do the extraordinary work and really appreciate their efforts. So I think that's, for me personally, very important. And I think in the whole field of customer experience, we should do more of that. And of course, since January, a published author, and since December last year, I'm also a proud, happy, but also extremely exhausted mom. So those of you who are parents, I think can relate, and brain fog is a real thing. That's for sure. Well,
congratulations on that. I know we were due to meet up previously, but understandably you were busy, and of course you will continue to be busy for the rest of your life.
The rest of my life, but yeah, obviously, yes. Yeah, yeah. But that's the most important role that I'll ever have in my life. So yeah, that's priority number one. But definitely happy to be back also in the professional setup and find some new inspiration, meet with people who are like-minded and exchange ideas. That's always something that fuels me and gives me a lot of satisfaction. So great to be part of today.
It's just wonderful. Thank you. And I'm glad you say about the awards, because having myself judged awards as well, I love being in that moment when someone's presenting the, you know, what they consider to be the best they can possibly be. And it's just where else do you get that? Maybe on your wedding day, where you're kind of standing up and presenting the best version of yourself to all the people you love. But you know, yeah, those awards, people think I've done really well here, and they've got to the final and they're presenting it to you, really proud of it, and you almost, you well up a little bit, because it's a case of, this is just does feel emotive, and it's okay to feel emotive. So I'm glad you get that perspective as well. Mm-hmm.
And it's very often, for me, it was extremely valuable. That's very often you just come across companies you've never heard of, from industries that maybe you were unaware of, and they do super cool things. And that's extremely inspirational and deserves to be put on the spotlight more often. So
exactly. You get to understand the conditions and the expectations and the context of their markets. And you go, oh, I've never really thought about how challenging that must be to make customer experience a success. So thank you, Alexandra. Lovely, lovely introduction, and great to see you again. And Frederic, would you mind giving us an appreciation of your journey through customer experience as well?
Yeah, sure. I'm a customer experience coach, actually. So I really help individuals, CX professionals in different industries to get more out of their CX programs. That's what I like to do most. And it also connects nicely with my background, because I studied psychology and coaching. I have a master in economic and consumer psychology. So I'm all about behavior and why do we do what we do, not only consumers, but also normal people. I'm native German. I grew up in Germany, and I moved to the Netherlands 15 years ago. So just like Alexandra, I have a different background, and I love to work with different cultures and really dive into those differences. I'm a certified customer experience professional since 2019. I'm also a columnist to CX Magazine here in the Netherlands because I love sharing stories and writing about customer experience. I'm not sure if you recognize that, but if you work in customer experience, it doesn't matter where you go or what you do, you always look at it from a different perspective, right? You judge it almost from like the CX professional point of view. Like, how could this have been done differently? Or what did they do so well to make you feel welcome or to make you feel a happy customer? So I like to share those stories. I have a history of working in CX for 10 years in different roles, CX management, CX interim management, conversion optimization in the very early years of my career, more focusing on the online side.
You're also a published author as well now.
I'm also a published author. Yes, thanks for pointing that out, Christopher. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to hear. I mean, I've always found you, Frederic, to be someone who is committed to the community and, you know, raising standards and sharing kind of expertise and learning along the way. And I think you're mm-hmm. absolutely right in that respect. We do look at things slightly differently. I think when you're in mm-hmm. customer experience, you try and look at it from, why are they doing this? What's the outcome they're trying to achieve? And has it worked? Because, you know, it may be it was really well intended, but by the time it's got diluted down to being something quite awful and landed in front of us, mm-hmm. it feels mm-hmm. quite uncomfortable. But, you know, being able to process where that might have come from is really quite healthy. Well, look, thank you both for giving that wonderful introduction. And you are joined, I'm sure, in many different ways, but as co-authors forever, your names branded on the bottom of the book. Now, and I said earlier, so we've had probably 10 different authors come and share their stories with us. Before last year, we kind of set up an official club, but before that, we were doing it as well. And with the exception, I think, of Adrian Swinsko, who takes a bit of an attitude, a bit of a swipe at, mm-hmm. you know, that's a silly way of doing things. Why are you doing it like that? No one's ever come at it from the perspective of how you get it wrong. So it's a very unique kind of approach. And actually, whenever we present ourselves, and I think organizations consider, you know, employees, what they don't want is someone who said, oh, I've had a perfect career, I've just sailed through everything without any trouble. They want to have people who've said, I've fallen over, I've picked myself up, I've broken things, I've had to put it, I've really learned the hard. You want people who know how to get things back on the rails when you come off the rails, not simply, well, I've never had to do anything different because the rails work brilliantly. So it's really refreshing to get that. What was the inspiration behind creating that perspective, or was that not the intention? Is this just you outpouring and the title came later?
No, I think it was definitely our intention to share those scars that we have. I mean, we have the stars and the scars. That's what we always say. And like you mentioned before, we work in the business. So we know all about the daily life of customer experience professionals. And we made so many mistakes ourselves. I mean, we worked together for, I think, 5 or 6 years in the same company. That's why we got to know each other. Mm-hmm. And that's where we also came across so many challenges. We faced so many like difficult managers, board directors, challenges on the IT side, like different systems that don't work together. Like, we've been there, we've done it, and we just wanted to share that to really add to the community and to help others to not make the same mistakes over again, because they can make new mistakes that we can learn from, and we'd rather have that than making the same mistakes over and over again. That was our intention and our goal.
But I think it's one thing to do that, but to actually commit it to paper is, you know, it is brave. This is not to know, it is brave, because you're putting it down there. It's not saying, it doesn't come, you know, it doesn't present you as, we got it wrong. It presents you as, this is how our learnings on the way to getting it right. But sorry, Alexandra, you're going to say something there.
No, I just wanted to add that basically, you know, we are huge admirers of Brené Brown, who's really well known on vulnerability topic. And we were just also vulnerable, saying, okay, these are the things that we did wrong, and there were many of them. Mm. And also, I think there is this saying about what a success is just going from one failure to another. you know, because this is the only way how you learn things and how you could improve things. So actually, the overall journey, I think there are more mistakes and pitfalls and things that didn't go the way you're supposed to before you actually succeed, because that's the only way to achieving what you want. Just adding to the point that Frederica made, that was intentional because it was just representing our journey, how it looked for us in the companies that we've worked previously.
And I think it also really helped that we knew we were not the only ones, because from research, we knew that 93% of all CX programs basically fail. They don't get the results that they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So reading that research, we were like, whoa, so it's not only us who are struggling. There are more CX professionals out there who could use some help.
Yeah, I remember reading a CX typology report on exactly that point, and it was astonishing how the 7% actually had made it work, because it just seemed more luck than judgment. I think it needs to be very, very well structured, doesn't it? But obviously, I mean, I'm imagining the scenario, but you're sharing with each other kind of almost in a therapy session, just, you know, these are the things that kind of go wrong. To go from that point to actually saying, let's do this, let's make it a book. Had you always wanted to be authors, or was this kind of a gift that you wanted, or is it, you know, kind of an attempt to get people to be more authentic and share their failures so that we can all learn faster? What was the motivation behind the book?
I think it all started when I left the company at Crump, where we worked together. And we were really sad that we wouldn't be working together anymore. And we were looking for a new project. And we both had this bucket list thing of one day writing a book, you know, like really abstract, one day in the future when we're like old and gray. And suddenly we came up with this idea and everything just made sense. I think it was like, yeah, a combination of coincidences and good timing to put this idea into practice and really get it done.
And did you decide to do it off your own back, or did you speak to a publisher or get approached by a publisher? How did the because neither of you have written before to this extreme, had you? I mean, you talk Correct. About you went away and locked yourselves away somewhere and just, I can't remember which of you is the one who said, let's do it this way, and the other one was pulled along. I can't remember who did the driving, but how did you get through that piece?
We just had the idea, we wrote because we were having a lunch, and then we asked the waiter, can you bring us a piece of paper and a pen? So we wrote like on this small piece of paper that we still have. I have to actually put it in the frame. Just, okay, what are the ideas, the goal, the deadline? We already put the deadline for ourselves. And without having a publisher, without knowing even a tiny bit of how the process looks like, what do we need to arrange? But we already had the content in our head. So we started with that. We started with brainstorming and saying, okay, this is, and only once we went to Italy for like this writer's retreat for 10 days. This is where we started our creative process. We started writing, and only once we had, I think, half of the book ready, we actually started contacting publishers. Mm-hmm. And then we came across one that actually sparked something in us, and we got a really good click. Then we decided to go with that. But yeah, it was just, everything was totally new, but we were so into this idea, so into this process, we wanted it, and we were actually enjoying it very much. Actually, before even meeting the publisher, we already did the photo shoot for our book. Can you imagine? So you kind of reversed the whole process.
Yeah. So what were you enjoying writing it, or was it enjoying just, you know, this extra opportunity to be in each other's company and feed off each other? I mean, what was the best part of it?
I think it was both, really, because we complement each other perfectly. I mean, we're not only former colleagues and co-authors, but also good friends. I don't know. We are just a good combination. So I really like the process of working on this together to complement each other's ideas and the process. And so that was nice. But I also like to work on the content, to see our ideas getting more tangible and really creating something together. And if you would compare this whole process to a customer journey, really, I think there were a few peaks and a few lows, obviously, as well. But going to Italy for 10 days together to really focus on writing was the best idea ever, because we had lots of pasta and red wine, but we were also really focused on this one thing, you know, not distracted by meetings, by busy schedules. Mm. So I think that made it really nice.
That was a big commitment because obviously at this point, Frederick, you'd stepped out of full-time employment. But Alexandra, this must have been your holiday, your personal holiday.
Indeed, indeed. That was my personal holiday, yes. But well, even though we were working, it was still in Italy. So that's my favorite country. It still felt, you know, a bit holidayish, so to say. So we were also enjoying, you know, late dinners and limoncello and ice cream and just a really beautiful scenery. So that also helped us to, you know, making it special. So it wasn't just a boring, dreadful thing that you have to sit behind your computer because it was end of May, really nice weather, and it was so much more rewarding. And you know, we really enjoyed that part a lot.
Well, Lauren is half Italian, and Michael is speaks good Italian, so I think
Oh.
the audience can concur with you. I spent my holiday in Italy last year, and my family have furious with me this year for not going back to Italy. So,
Oh, okay.
it's once hooked, eh? Once hooked. And tell us about, well, I wanted to ask about editing because obviously you normally have an editor, but you've got two editors who are also the authors. I mean, you must have been, what was the criteria for allowing something in? Did you just roll over with each other, or were you quite challenging about what should and shouldn't go in?
I think it was a good decision from the very start to keep our different chapters
Your
separate.
different specialisms, yeah, I appreciate that.
Exactly, because that made it easier for us to really stick to our part, and we gave a lot of feedback to each other, obviously, and that helped a lot. But we did have an editor afterwards. So once we found our publisher, we also got an editor who was really critical on our content. So that was like where the customer journey took a deep dive and where it got really hard. And I mean, that was the hard work. But in general, again, because we are a really good team, we accept each other's feedback, and we had a few discussions, but not, it wasn't too difficult, that part, really.
Because I've not found any conflict. I mean, with the two authors, I'd anticipate there could be some conflict in there, in terms of I think like this and I actually think slightly like. And I've not found that. I've not found gaps. I've not found conflicts. It feels like you were almost sitting next to each other with your desks and your typewriters and just checking as you go through, as if one of you was responsible for the goodies and one of you was responsible for the baddies in the book, and you're just like, just check they're still working. Was it as kind of as easy as that, or are there points where you go, actually, this has made me think?
No, I think we were literally sitting next to each other while we were writing, so we were able to check in with each other all the time. But I remember that later, like half a year after writing the book, the editor came in and he was like, "No, this whole chapter has to go out. This shouldn't be in the book." And then we had some discussions about, "Whoa, really? Like, it took so much time and effort to write this, and it was my chapter. I love this. It was really difficult to let go." So we had some discussions about that for sure. And also afterwards, we had to rearrange everything again because writing is one thing, but then, like you said, making sure that everything aligns and that there are different logical connections within the book, that was a lot of work. That sounds really easy right now, but that was a lot of work to make it fit together.
And a lot of research, I guess, a lot of research in here as well, because I mean, you cram it full of kind of models that have inspired you and references, and very kindly provide lots of kind of case studies to evidence, which obviously is what you really want, is kind of prove it to me. So did you was there a period of research, or did these things kind of come to you as you were forming the content?
Yeah, indeed, the latter. So as we were working on it, we were also trying some of it we already knew because there are things that we just swear by and we use very often, like Cotter's model of change, for instance. But other things we didn't want our book to be yet another theoretical book about customer experience because there are so many out there. So for us, it was really essential that it's very practical, but also facts-based or research-based. Some things we also were researching while we were writing the content to see, okay, can we see if we can back it up with something that already exists or has been done? But a lot we already knew that we want to include in the first place. And I also do not recall any, long discussions about which do we keep, which we shouldn't. For me, like really the editing part was really the most dreadful because you have to reread what you have written for the 50th time, and then you don't really know what you're reading anymore. So I think that was the least fun part. But yeah, as Frederica said, we complement each other so well, and we are quite really good at giving each other feedback. It went quite smooth. I think we had more disagreements maybe with the editor on some small bits than between each other.
So we've got some questions. So I'm going to give my colleagues and Natasha an opportunity to pose some questions too. And then we've got a whole raft of them that people have provided to us. If it's okay, I'll come back to those afterwards. So Natasha, I'll let you come in first. If you have a question you'd like to put regarding the book. And please,
yes,
in terms of who you are and your role, Natasha.
Fab. I'm Natasha, work for Worcester Bosch as the Customer Experience and Employee Experience graduate. So we're in the manufacturing sector. So lots around customer experience, providing products to our consumers, but also installers of our goods as well. So I work as a team of two at the minute within the marketing department. So very small, but it's really nice that the business is very on board with customer experience, one of our strategic pillars to focus towards. That's a great buy-in from the start. Really loved the book. Really nice to see different perspective. As Christopher was saying, you often read a lot of books either shunning NPS or going quite general in terms of I agree with this but I disagree with this. So this was a really good different perspective that I hadn't read before, as I'm quite new to the customer experience field. Only been working within this for the year. Really nice to see your links between EX and CX, as that is directly my role. I'm the only one within Worcester Bosch that does that as a role, so it's really reassuring that you agree that it's really important. Definitely agreeing. I've written some notes on my screen, that's why I'm looking over here. Agree about being more transparent about our work. As a team of two, find it very difficult. We have regular check-ins with different departments, which we call our clinics. So we get survey data back every month. We do a lot of active listening on social media, and then feedback in these clinics every month with these wider departments. But it's often tricky to, with just two, get all the information read, feedback what we think, hope they're working on it. But the loop is often difficult. I don't know if you've had experience of that, trying to get it closed often. The time is the most difficult challenge. So I think for me, question wise, I've done a lot of talking there. We're finding it difficult in terms of, for one, we rely heavily on surveys. We're reviewing our reporting at the minute to do a bit more active listening. One of our difficulties has been getting good response rates. So I don't know if you have any suggestions on that or different avenues we could look into. And also, yeah, anything in terms of feedback loops and promoting what we're doing internally, we're often worried that if you rely heavily on emails, it would just get lost. So anything in that sort of remit, if that's clear.
Yeah, good question. I think something that many companies and CX professionals struggle to get done in the right way. Concerning the response rate, I think the most important part is closing the feedback loop, especially if you have reoccurring customers, because once they notice that you act upon the feedback and you give them feedback about their feedback, they are happy to provide more insights for you as well. And really depending on your company and how many customers you have, you could of course look into splitting different customer groups and not asking the same customers over and over again. You can look at making sure that you provide short and relevant questions. So, what's really something that you have to ask to the customer, or which information could you maybe already get out of your process information or from employees? Because I think that's one huge misunderstanding, that we have to ask everything to customers. There's always so much information already available within the company that you could almost cut your survey in half. I'm not sure if you do that already, but
this is literally what we've been doing this week. We've literally looked at it and thought, we're abusing this because marketing purposes, we want to have a nice tagline, or we wanted to find out a bit about that. So yeah, that's really reassuring, because we've tried to condense it as much as possible, use those either like digital tools or things like that. So that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, as for the feedback loop, what we did at Crumb, for example, is we really appointed one responsible manager to each question in the survey. Because asking questions to customers is not a goal itself, right? You don't do that for your own team. You always do that to help the business. So if you really connect every single question, every single KPI to the right team, to the right manager, and make sure that they act upon it, That really helps a lot, because you will also notice once there is maybe a team that is not acting upon it, or maybe they don't need it anymore, or maybe they are busy doing other things, then what's the point of still collecting this feedback if it's not picked up anyway? So I would really start there and make sure that you have responsibilities really matched with the different questions in your survey.
Brilliant. Thank you.
I would add one more tip for engaging also employees to kind of take action on that feedback. What also one of the countries at Crump is doing, that for instance, if you have feedback about, I don't know, pricing, there's also customers are also often giving you open comments, right, where they just explain something. Let's say every month you could just collect everything or just part of what comes in and share it with them, the employees, and let them choose. For instance, what do you think is the most important topic or the most few important topics that we should work on? That also helps, let's say, the department to prioritize, and they also feel like they are involved, like they get to say something about it, because they also understand the business process better. So they know that, for instance, these topics are way easier to solve, and but maybe we can do some quick fixes, and it will not require long a project. So that's also how you could tackle this. So also involving employees more and taking them along, so the they also feel like they have a say in it. They can also contribute to improving services.
No, that's perfect. I think, that will work really well with the setup that we've got. It's really great that we've got buy-in right from the top. That's definitely really great and supportive in this tiny team at the minute. But yeah, no, that's really great. So thank you both.
I like the way you get masterclasses out of these sessions, Natasha. It's brilliant. Very good. Very resourceful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Michael, do you have a question?
Sure, yes. Thanks a lot. My name's Michael Brandt. I'm a independent CX consultant, and I live just outside Lugano in Switzerland.
Close to Lake Como.
I learned Italian in high school, and now the past 4 years I've been able to use it on a daily basis. So I really liked your answer to Natasha's question, because I was working 25 years in a corporate environment with ABB, where I was responsible for our NPS program, our voice of customer experience and complaint management. And I love the way that you said it's good to attribute like responsibility for a question. We did slightly differently, but the principle was the same. And I think that's great. And how that also increases your response rate, because customers see that, you know, that you're actually doing something with their feedback. My question is, why do you think it is that so many companies have problems with closing that loop, when it is such a beneficial part of the process, but so often gets neglected or ignored? Or
I think there's a huge misunderstanding, and I'm curious whether you recognize the same pattern, but there's a huge misunderstanding, especially in bigger corporates, where they are only focusing on the KPIs, like on the target that they have to achieve, only on the numbers, and not on the whole system that's behind it. So they are only focusing on getting the NPS like to a 60 instead of 50. And they are blindly focusing on this number without really acting upon it. And then they wonder why employees start gaming. So why they start to influence the scores. So I think that's definitely one part. And the other part is that it's really hard. It's really difficult to get everyone's commitment, because you are kind of on this CX island. I mean, we try to get off it as much as possible, but still you are within one department. Doesn't matter which department, but you are within one department. And all of these other departments have different priorities, have different goals. And everyone's busy, right? Everyone has a packed schedule, and they're focusing on their own world, their own bubble. So I think one of the secrets is to burst that bubble and to help them understand how valuable this feedback is. Mm-hmm. Because once you get them to read the feedback, to make it visual, really maybe record a few videos with customers, really let them feel the pain and see what's going on, my experience is that they often open their eyes and they're like, oh, wow, I had no idea that this was going on. And that gets them motivated, right? That gets them really into this place where they want to help the customer and want to solve problems.
Right.
I also think that naturally people tend to, even though they would like to see the outside in perspective, that they say, yes, I want to know what my customers think, what they need, so that we can adjust our processes and services so we can be more customer-centric. Your natural tendency is still to do things inside out. Mm-hmm. So you still have, if you're working with an organizational company, that's still your primary vision, so to say, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because you know internal processes, you know the people, you know how things work. So it's a tiny bit more difficult to step out of that zone and turn around and just look at from the other side. So it takes effort, and it you need to be conscious of that in order to see the difference. And I also think that proving the ROI of customer experience is still a huge topic, and still many companies or CX professionals struggle with this. They try to really come up with numbers. So how this KPI or what this our NPS means in terms of turnover, profits, losses, etc. It's also complicated to prove that, to be extremely certain that that's the connection, because you have so many factors that are influencing it.
Right.
That's what I've seen, at least in the companies that I've worked before. Some people are reluctant when it comes to acting on this feedback and taking action, because they say, okay, but what will it actually bring? So that could be also one of the influencing factors. There's a lot in there that could be the
the answer. I do like that point, because you hear that quite often, don't you, that we're all accountable for delivering a great customer experience. Well, let's have a look and see what that measures like in terms of satisfaction. How can we all be responsible and everything we do influence customer experience, and yet we can just measure it on this one single sentiment? To your point, it's too many variables that influence. And if you can get the organization to measure the progress you're making and the outcomes you're achieving, then obviously you're in a better position. Thank you, Michael and Natasha. I've got Lauren's question, but I've got another one first of all for you, which is put by one of the other guests to the book club, and they wanted to know, are there any other failures that surprised you? You look back and go, why did that not work? That should have worked. Are there some aspects of customer experience which are just, we haven't figured out yet?
I think what's curious is that the more companies I get to know from the inside, the more I'm surprised how different all of them are, because you would expect that customer experience is like one field of expertise. And once you know how it works, you know how it works, right? But every time I get into a new company, I'm surprised again that it's difficult again, that you have different challenges again, that you have different management again, different systems again. Like, I think that's still up until today my biggest surprise, that it gets never boring. It's always challenging. I see Michael nodding indeed. I mean, that's really surprising to me. Like, at one point I thought I would have figured it out and I would like know what to do and it would be like copy paste, but that's like actually not the case.
So we're always, I mean, I can't remember who said it, we're always students of customer experience, because there's always learning to have, isn't there, different contexts and what have you, as you go through. You got any views on that, Alexandra? Is there a topic that you feel, actually, why does that not work? That should work. Or when it failed, it surprised you?
Yeah, when I look back, I came across this situation almost exactly same, very similar, in two companies. When you already have customer experience quite well embedded in the organization, you have your measurements, your reporting on NPS, CSAT, you're already part of the business goals, you have your ambassadors or people who are helping you with it, and everyone seems to be on board. They understand that, we want to be customer-centric as an organization. We want to do everything that we can to be better. And then all of a sudden, let's say, management changes. There are new people on board who are shifting the direction. And then you feel like, okay, so we are going back to square one. how quick, I was really shocked and even frustrated to see how quickly can it go from, we are already so far, or we have achieved so much, into, okay, we need to rethink, refine, redesign, because we are starting from scratch again. We need to readjust because the business direction has changed drastically. So we need to redefine the value that we are bringing. It's kind of, I understand that sometimes you have to go two steps back in order to move forward.
Yeah.
But that's in that moment when you are in this particular situation, it feels like a huge, huge step back. Like, okay, what the heck happened? Mm. But it's just, you work with people, if you don't understand people, you don't understand business. So you also need to understand their motivation, where they are coming from, what they want to achieve. And then your role is, okay, how can I support them in their strategy by also still keeping CX alive and still working on the things that you believe in, because at the end of the day, we believe that customer experience is the way to go, right? But it does happen. It can really change very quickly.
I mean, you referenced there Sinek, who's is another one of your
Simon, yeah.
Your favorites in the book, I noticed. We talk about sharing everything in the spirit of progress. We've recognized the importance of being transparent, and you go on a lot about being your authentic self. You can't pretend to be something to customers and on the inside be very different. I think Disney say, don't they, make them smile, whether you're at the front on the stage or backstage, you make them smile. So that's what you do. But I've had this with organizations who have said that's difficult. That's difficult because a number of reasons. One, we like to keep things close to our chest. If we want to change, we can change. And two, we feel like we're giving things away to our competitors if we actually are being authentic and open and revealing more of ourselves. With changing expectations, I saw a really interesting piece last week by Concentrix talking about, if we know we're talking to an AI, we will lie more often, hugely more often, versus if we're talking to a human. So how can you still be authentic in such a rapidly changing landscape where things are moving so fast and customers' expectations, rightly or wrongly, are moving? I mean, how can you continue to be authentic? I'm not saying you can't, but I'm just interested to get your perspective, because it really is, back to your hero there, you really have to be vulnerable, don't you? You have to show your vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. I mean, it really takes a lot of courage to allow yourself to be genuine and authentic. And I think this is something that you get to practice every single day. Because for individuals, sometimes it takes a lot of time to realize, okay, how can I be more authentic? What are the things that make me more authentic? And then I think for organizations can even be more difficult, because of course we live in ever-changing world. There's a lot of competition around, so you want to keep tabs on what they are doing, but at the same time, don't get influenced too much what's out there, because then you might do things that are not necessarily doing your favors, because they are not in line with your identity. I would say just maybe a simple thing like we both do. So whenever we are starting something new or considering a new project, we always do this strategy check. So does this new initiative, is this supporting our strategy? And a similar thing maybe companies could do. Okay, is this step that we are taking, this maybe new acquisition, this piece of communication, is this representing who we truly are, who we want to be to the outer world? Is this the message that we want to convey? I think it doesn't have to be very complicated, but it takes a lot of self-awareness also creating a habit for yourself. It's not easy, of course, obviously, and it's a lot of work, but what's not, right?
You reference the importance of HR, I mean, and that idea of bringing the right people in then, because you can't just become that, can you? If you've grown up and you're, I mean, we've started to find some companies have the hoarder mentality, where they won't share information because it's kind of, don't want other people to know, our colleagues. Or I can't show it to you until I've shown it to them, because obviously that's not the right thing to do. And then you have the others who have a sharing mentality, where they're so, here you come and read it all, come see it all, not edited yet. And I guess that goes right back to who they think they are, their purpose for being, and even the original leaders and how they thought, success would look like. So is it fair to say that you could find organizations for which that authenticity will work against you?
I don't think so, because I think the whole point of authenticity is that you cannot copy it. So I mean, you can be transparent because if another company tries to copy what you do, they won't be authentic, right? They will be the copycats who don't have it in their culture. They do it to be successful and they try to learn this kind of trick. But I think if you're really, truly authentic in your culture, in the way that you do things, in your HR department, in the way that you hire people, in how you develop people, that's not something that someone can easily copy. And it doesn't really matter, like Alex also said, what's going on in your environment, because it's about, yeah, staying true to yourself, who you are and what.
Yeah, we also had multiple inspiration sessions with other professionals from other companies just to learn how are they doing things. And very often we had this realization, oh, this is super cool, but it's not going to work in our company.
Yeah.
So you also, if you are aware of that, then you know, okay, it's great for them in their context. It's an absolutely fantastic idea, but it's not going to work in our case. So you have to also, picking the things that are right for you, right for your vision, and supporting what you want to achieve, who you want to be.
It's, as you say, it's self-awareness, it's having confidence, it's being comfortable with your own vulnerabilities and having a really strong frame of reference in terms of what your authenticity is, I guess, is important, which is back to the culture piece. Well, we're coming to the end of our hour now, so I want to give you an opportunity to just share with us what comes next. Is there a book? Is there a TV show? Is there a Netflix?
Dancing with the Stars.
Exactly, yeah. Dancing with the CX Stars. So what are your plans now? I mean, you clearly, you lit up when you were talking about the process and working together again. So is there opportunity to come together and do other things? Or have you got other books you want to pen? Or what are your plans?
I'll let you go first, Alex.
Yes, okay. Well, funny you should say this, Christopher, because literally today we just had a WhatsApp conversation and I was saying that, okay, I don't really feel sharp because I have a mom brain, so I'm still, you know, I'm not going to be sharp ever. And Friederike said, well, remind me to never write a book with you again. Of course, we were laughing because, and I said, okay, they say that this comes back, the sharpness comes back after a while of being a mom. So I do hope mine comes back, but I'm definitely in, and I think that would be a really nice continuation. I'm not sure which topic will we pick next, but I think the future holds something for us.
Well, I think you'll have an absolute catalogue of AI failures that you'll be able to help people navigate.
Yeah.
And you probably won't have to wait very long until they, you know, there's a books with there.
Yeah, and I think it's even more interesting now because we haven't been working together for 3 years. And within these 3 years, we've learned so much. I mean, so many new things, so many new failures that we made, new directions that we developed into. So I think there's a lot of stuff in there for the second book. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because as Natasha said, it's a different perspective and you can't write this book unless you know what you're doing. It's impossible. So it really echoes your credibility as practitioners and working within organizations and now from your perspective, Frederic, helping other organizations. I've had a delightful time, really enjoyed spending some more time with you. And I've read the book when you first sent it, so it gave me an opportunity to go back into it again. And I realized it is a bit of a reference book as well. It's quite helpful. You can just dive into different parts and go, oh, have a look at that and see what they said about that. So it's really, really, really helpful. Thank you so much for eventually being guests on our really, really grateful to have you. And I hope you've had plenty of other podcast opportunities. I mean, your book deserves to get a wide recognition. It isn't written with a particular geographical bias. It's a really helpful book for anyone. So I do hope it gets spread far and wide.
We're thank very you glad so you much. Think so. Thank you very much. Yeah, we've been it's been great to be here and to share our experiences and have a chat with you. Very lovely. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
For that opportunity.
See you, maybe 1 or 2 years from now to talk about the second book.
Absolutely. Very much look forward to that. Well, look, thank you to all the book club members and Alexandre and Frederic. We'll end it there and wish you both all the best with your future endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Have a great afternoon.